Good morning, honorable members and fellow guests. Because the chairperson of the committee is not well to preside over this meeting, we are going to have to elect an acting chairperson for this meeting. Without any further waste of time, can I have nominations for the acting board chief of chairperson of the committee?
I propose the honorable Pony Lord will stand up for you, the acting chief.
Any further nomination? In the absence of further nomination and presumable abstention, it gives me privilege to ask Honorable Mushwana to come over and take. Thank you.
With this, actually, I wanted to elect the chairperson, but it's like they elected if I could deal with that way. In front of us was a very short agenda, straightforward agenda, but even before we go to that, I would like to welcome everybody who is here, the representative from Ili Khalid Foundation and the members of parliament and the staff that's attached to this particular committee. You are welcome. I would request that we all participate fruitfully to make sure that we enhance this particular desk. We are going to start with introduction. We'll start with the representative of Ili Khalid. I don't know if you're going to represent yourself individually or the somebody. Thank you. Driver will be getting a lot of assistance the whole day from and I'm qualified to get a lot of that assistance because I think this is my first meeting within culture. I was within higher education and basic education. I'm advised it must be the members of parliament that introducing themselves. I'll start by introducing myself. My name is Foni Mushwana, hailing from Limpopo, deployed to this government by the African National Congress, and I serve in this committee. Thank you.
My name is Linda Mosa. I'm also a member of this portfolio committee. I'm also the whole business committee, deployed by the ANC.
Tewera Eludali Shiva. I'm a member of this committee deployed by the ANC from Limpopo province. Thank you.
I'm D.W. Mabunda, also serving in this committee deployed by the ANC. Thanks.
Good morning. I'm Anani Lotte, D.A.
Mna ke ndiphumelele siqela obuya ku Congress of the People ndililungu lale committee.
Good
morning, members. My name is Phumzile Simelela from the Office of the Deputy Minister of Arts and Culture. Thank you.
Morning, ma'am. My name is Erwin Langefeld from the Department of Arts and Culture.
Morning, my name is Sema Hatane, the PLO Arts and Culture.
Good morning, I'm Nerissa Ramdani, the CEO of the Ifaletu Foundation.
Thank you very much. Okay, we are moving on to item number two. And first of all, we need to apologize for the portfolio committee. And she will not be able to come here because she's hospitalized. And yeah, we wish her well. We wish her well. I hope she will be chairing in the next meeting. Thank you very much. Can we then go to the introduction? No, we have done the opportunity. My apologies. Then we want to check if there is any other apology besides this one of the president of the portfolio committee.
We have done the same thing with another.
Madam Chair, I've just noticed that there are some other members that were never introduced here. I don't know if they were introduced. I see some members. I don't know if already they were introduced.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for assisting. That's why you are seated strategically at that particular corner. Because from this end, I thought everybody introduced themselves. If we are in this room, it's important that we know who is here. Can we get those who have not told us who they are to kindly introduce themselves?
My name is Faith Kwaza from the Parliamentary Communication Services.
My name is Kuntu Nankai. I work for the committee section. I'm a CA.
Mohati Fahere, portfolio committee researcher.
Sibam Yelam Tunjin, executive secretary to the chairperson of the committee.
Nawal Fahere, independent newspapers.
Honourable Chair, I'm Abdallah Driscoll from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
No. Thank you very much. We apologize for those small and predicaments. Can we then move to, because I want to believe we have accepted them for this meeting. Yes. Yeah. There is still a hand.
There's two other members who I think they take leave because of other developments that they must give attention to.
Could we get the two members who are there? Okay, members, the names will follow later, and so it will be communicated to the secretary here. There are two members that are not here. Like I said, I'm new. I might not necessarily remember who is not here. So we'll get their names, and I want to move that we accept those. Can we move on? Thank you. Can we then hand over to Ili Faletu Foundation for presentation?
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, we thank you for this opportunity to be able to present the work of our foundation to you today. But at the outset, I must also tender an apology for the lack of a PowerPoint presentation due to some technical challenges. Okay. presentation today with, you do have a draft outline of the work of Ifalesu in front of you, but I would like to begin by, can I continue? Okay. I'd like to begin to explain how the foundation was established. It is an NGO that's fairly new, just over 5 years old, but has a very interesting history and a very strong Australian identity, because in 2004, two former Australian diplomats, a Mr. Bruce Haig and a Miss Di Johnston, who were posted in South Africa in the 1960s and 70s, approached the former Minister of Arts and Culture, Dr. Jordan, with a view to donating artwork that they had purchased when they were posted here in that period. And this had given rise to the realization by the former minister, as well as by stakeholders in South Africa, that there may be many such art collections out there in the world, and that there needed to be a mechanism to deal with bringing it back into South Africa. And this is what inspired the former minister, as well as stakeholders, to set up Ifalesu in 2005. Now, with the birth of Ifalesu, it initiated a global hunt to recover these artworks of South African township art that flourished during the 60s and 70s. And it came to represent a very unique commentary on that dark time in our history. Now, while much of that artwork was unsung at home, it was recognized by visitors and diplomats who purchased them almost clandestinely and shipped them away from our shores. Now, targeting that particular constituency of diplomats, executives who were posted here at the time, as well as visitors, Ifalesu has focused on bringing back those collections to fill that void in our cultural heritage. Now, when Ifalesu was formed in 2005, it was done so with the intention of addressing challenges in the heritage sector. And these included challenges such as locating art and art objects that had left South Africa during the struggle era, as well as the lack of available skills and the failure to use heritage to empower communities. Now, what we'd like to also point out at this stage is that the concept that all cultural heritage present in a country or overseas belongs to all its citizens is a powerful concept. So taking ownership of this heritage and leveraging it for developmental needs is a nation-building exercise and powerful enough for economic development of the country. And it is this recognition, members, that informs the work of the Ifalesu Foundation and positions it well for its holistic involvement in repatriation, education, and development work in the heritage sector. And much of our work, of course, targets the youth of South Africa for the very reason that when you look at the first decade of our democracy, it correctly focused on redressing imbalances in the communities, in the material welfare of citizens. But it has become clear that the neglect of the RDP of the soul has resulted in violence in our society, crime, anger by youth, and so on. Therefore, by harnessing our lessons over the last 2 to 3 years, and in order to respond to current challenges in the heritage sector, Ifalesu took the decision to incorporate the development aspect into our work. This was guided by our research, which pointed to the lack of available skills
and the failure to use heritage to create a more entrepreneurial society in South Africa, thus contributing to the economic development of the country. Now, there are three arms that inform the mandate of Ifaletu's work. They are core business, which is repatriation of art and art objects from abroad, educational and outreach programs focusing on human rights and advocacy, which arise out of the content of the art collection, and thirdly, creating entrepreneurial development by addressing national impact priorities such as poverty alleviation and the Millennium Goals. Do you want me to speak without that? I'm sure you can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, my concern is that we record what these machines are on, so that if we do without it, I don't think we'll get the record. But I think it's not okay if you let
us. Okay. Let me just move it a little bit.
You like to go on with something, but I thought while it was on your left, it was fine. But it's fine. If it can't be okay, then you let it go.
Let me just try this again.
Yeah.
Is this better?
And then there's no phone which is on somewhere here, but no.
Okay. Okay. Let me try this one.
Okay.
Ifaletu is not a repository. Oh no. I'll have to turn this off.
Yeah. I'm being assistant again. I told the first morning and I said that we will rotate so that we don't take care. Because these are not user friendly today for sure. So
yeah.
I put this on his paper. But we can't go this. Or can we agree that if it's okay, once you try it, the person in front of you can use that one. But in the meantime, we'll agree that that one will rotate. Is that fine? Thank you. That's more one. Is it? The question is, please sorry for this.
That's fine. Okay, the work of Ifaletu is guided by the recognition that it is not a repository. But we are a facilitator of repatriation in South Africa, community and outreach development, skills and enterprise development initiatives. Today, Ifaletu manages the largest heritage repatriation effort in South Africa. But, of course, this is done in the absence of a legislative framework relating to repatriation. However, Ifaletu complies with national and international heritage legislation and regulation, which include the Convention on the Means of Prohibiting and Preventing the Illicit Import, Export, and Transfer of Ownership of Cultural Property of November 1970, the South African National Heritage Resources Act, SARA regulations, and the UNIDROIT and UNESCO conventions. And all our efforts are aligned to cultural and intellectual property rights. Now, Ifaletu is governed by two boards. We have a South African board of directors, which is responsible for governance, risk management, policy, and strategy. And we have an international board, which is responsible for overseeing much of Ifaletu's work, especially the requirement that they open doors for us outside of South Africa. But if you look at our vision is to be a facilitator of the creative arts as a healing medium and to raise the awareness of the centrality of culture and heritage
as an intrinsic part of what it means to be a rounded society. And that vision, I think, encapsulates the holistic nature of Ifalesu's work. The mission, on the other hand, promotes partnerships and initiatives that focus on repatriation and preservation of our heritage. It promotes skills and entrepreneurship amongst artists and communities, and applies the creative arts to the fashion industry. Now, you may well ask, why the fashion industry? Now, while Ifalesu started out as an organization devoted to repatriation of South African art, in consultation with the former minister, we've extended the mandate to look at South African heritage. That includes archival collections, film, music, whatever is found out there, and that should undergo a proper verification process in order to be brought back to South Africa. So that mandate has been extended. And when Ifalesu took the decision to incorporate the developmental element into its work and to link it to the Millennium Goals and to national impact priorities, we use the term creative industries. So it allows us to focus on development of visual artists, crafters, sculptors, as well as those involved in fashion. And I come back to the question of why fashion. Now, what we've done is we have used the European and American model of linking art to fashion. Fashion is considered part of the creative industry, and the importance of this is that we are encouraging South African fashion designers to allow themselves to be inspired by the content of the Ifalesu art collection. Hence, fashion created by designers linked to Ifalesu are all inspired by the lines, the colors, the content, the diversity of the heritage collection that's been repatriated. And it's also a good mechanism in terms of encouraging youth in South Africa to link themselves to the South African identity. And also, it's linked very closely to the Proudly South African campaign, so that we can encourage our young people to buy local, as opposed to the usual line that we often get from them. I mean, I recall when we decided to embark on linking fashion to heritage, we did a great deal of research and interviewed young people in the country. And we asked them, would you wear an item of clothing designed by the Ifalesu designers? And the answer immediately was no. Why not? I'd rather wear Nike, Reebok, etc. So again, it's an attempt to encourage young people to have pride in what is South African, which is linked to the whole project, which is about South African patriotism, identity, etc. And that's why we've included fashion in this overall mission and in terms of our work. And if you look at the beneficiaries of Ifalesu's work, while we may be based in Tshwane, our work is of a national nature. Hence, it benefits the geographically isolated communities of South Africa because many of our projects focus on the rural nodes of the country, and specifically women and youth. And of course, the economy benefits from our economic development programs. Youth and women, including the physically and mentally disabled communities. I mean, we've done a wonderful project with the mentally and disabled community in KwaZulu-Natal. And that's just been completed. And, of course, South African tourism benefits from our branding of South African cultural heritage as well as our incubator programs, which I'll talk about sometime during my presentation. And while in terms of representativity of our work, we recognize the diverse nature of South Africa, and therefore in all our project funding, our representativity is as follows. Rural youth, we focus on 60%, rural women 40%, African 80%, and other 20%. And of course, our impact areas are national and international. 60% of our work is international because we're required to repatriate heritage from abroad. At the same time, we are expected and required to market the South African cultural brand abroad and to market the cultural strength that resides in South Africa. Hence we say that large percentage of our work is on the foreign market. Our funding history, considering we're just over 5.5 years old, we started out in 2005 with seed funding of 4 million rand from the Department of Arts and Culture. That was required to develop the infrastructure, get the office space, staff, etc., to get the company going. And a further sum of 3 million was furnished by BHP Billiton. We were successful in securing this from BHP Billiton because of the initial Australian link to the project. But over the years, project funding has come from the list I've provided there, the Andrew Mellon Foundation, EPSA Foundation, AusAid, BarlowWorld. Further funding is coming from the Department of Arts and Culture since 2008, the Development Bank of South Africa, Friedrich Ebert Stiftung, the IDC, the National Heritage Council, Mozambique Department of Arts and Culture, Tata Africa, Transnet Foundation, and two very other important funders, which are not listed here, are the National Lotto and the National Arts Council. Now, you may wonder why the Mozambique Department of Arts and Culture. Because of the success Ifaletu has enjoyed in linking fashion to heritage, the Mozambique Department of Arts and Culture has secured our services to look at the success we've achieved in this arena, because they've been attempting to do the same thing, create pride in what is Mozambican by linking culture to and fashion to heritage. And as a result of that, we participate in many of their cultural events which they funded, such as Mozambique Fashion Week, where we've taken designers from the rural areas in South Africa to showcase the Ifaletu range they've created using the art collections at Mozambique Fashion Week. So that was one of the examples of assistance we have received from the Mozambican Department of Arts and Culture. And all of this is project funding. And this, of course, I will allude to later again, the challenges we have of securing core funding. While the Department of Arts and Culture has been assisting Ifaletu with core funding, that remains a challenge. Whereas project funding is very easy to secure, especially when it's linked to economic development of the country. Hence, we haven't experienced problems in those areas in terms of the projects we've implemented over the last few years. If you look at some of our international and national partners, these are a few of them, and it's quite a range, ranging from foundations to universities to heritage centers in South Africa, to corporations, to schools, etc. And international as well. We have partnerships with organizations in the United States, India, Chile, the UK, Mozambique, Kenya, these are just, and of course all the foreign missions. The foreign missions are extremely critical to Ifaletu's work. When you talk about the foreign missions in South Africa, they've been have assisted greatly in the location of art collections or heritage material in their respective countries, and also in assisting us in terms of the legal processes necessary to secure repatriation from their countries. Our missions abroad assist us in the same manner in terms of locating artworks or other heritage material in the countries in which they located, and in terms of our international work abroad. Hence, the relationship with missions here and abroad is very important. And also, we've aligned ourselves very closely over the last few years with tourism bodies such as SA Tourism in London, the International Marketing Councils of South Africa, and London Tourism, because we have created a direct link between the work of Ifaletu, heritage development, economic development, and the promotion of South African tourism. Now I'd like to focus on highlights over the last 3 years. Over the last 3 years, Ifaletu has implemented 26 national and international projects. And these 26 refer to the many exhibitions which we've hosted for our trainees in South Africa and abroad, as well as the many training initiatives that we've run, the entrepreneurial development, the product development initiatives, as well as the educational projects we've run throughout the country. So this would encompass the range of 26 national and international projects that we've run. Then we have successfully implemented the Ifaletu internship programs, which have resulted in Ifaletu trainees obtaining gainful employment. But this has been a very interesting development here, because it alludes to a challenge we face. We bring in interns to the Ifaletu Foundation for 4-monthly stints. So every 4 months we have new interns. So during the course of the year we have about 4 to 5 interns with Ifaletu. And all of them are young people from the rural areas, but who've completed the grade 12 year, but do not have the means to enter further education. So by providing this kind of internship and exposing them to the corporate world and so on, we hope to open doors for them and create employment. But what has happened is, for example, in the last year, one of our interns was eventually poached by the South African Revenue Service, who's taken her on. She's from Mabopane Township. They've taken her on to train her and to provide financial assistance for her to secure post-matric studies. We're very pleased with that, but that's the South African Revenue Service. It's not a heritage sector. Then another intern has been taken on board by the Reserve Bank with the same purpose of providing financial assistance for further studies, in-service training, etc., not the heritage sector. And of course, assuringly enough, another intern has gone to South Korea. Yes, she's there teaching English in a school and teaching South African heritage. Wonderful, she's branding our heritage in South Korea, but we've lost her skills to South Africa. And this is what we experience. We bring in these interns, and they do secure employment and financial assistance, because Ifaletu has developed a good track record in terms of training and development. But we're unable to keep them in the sector. We're unable to attract people to the sector. We train them and they go off into the private sector. Again, of course, perhaps the heritage sector is not lucrative enough. We understand that. Then Ifaletu has been very involved in the fossil casting project, which I've highlighted with specific reference. We have a very good partnership with the Origin Center at Fisk University, which has been, of course, you are familiar with Dr. Lee Berger and his famous discoveries. And as fossils are considered part of the heritage, we've included fossil casting as part of our entrepreneurial development program, because there is a lack of skill. Once the discoveries are made by Dr. Lee Berger, there's a demand all over the world for these fossils. There's a demand by scientists, etc. And we do not have the skills in South Africa for people to make these fossils. So what they've done is, this is part of the Mamelodi training program funded by the U.S. Embassy, where we've taken about 16 young people from Mamelodi, placed them with Fisk University, with Dr. Lee Berger, and trained them in fossil casting with a view to them getting internships and employment at Fisk University. Of that group, 4 have secured permanent employment now at this university. 2 of them have been part of the discoveries, the latest discoveries of Sidiba, and will be featured in the National Geographic magazine in July. So again, it's the creative use of heritage and training that has assisted in creating employment opportunities for these young people. Then we've launched and implemented in the last year one of our most exciting projects ever. It was the Mobile Entrepreneurial and Human Rights School Program. This was a truck that was donated by Tata Africa, and with funding from the Development Bank and the Lotto, we customized the body, both the body of a vehicle, and customized it into a highly sophisticated training facility. and it travels through the rural areas as opposed to us bringing rural communities to Gauteng or going out there. We send the vehicle out there, and it's market linked, where they're training women and youth in the production of market ready products in consultation with stores. And in the last year, 2,500 trainees have undergone this entrepreneurial training. It started off in KwaZulu-Natal in the four areas of Msinga, Mandeni, Nsinzini, and KwaMashu. And is now moving to Limpopo, to Elim in Limpopo. And then we move to Mpumalanga. And the products created have, during the last phase of training, have sold very well during Christmas at malls in Gauteng, and also have been created for the corporate market, where it's been used as corporate gifts. So these young trainees are earning quite a handsome sum from this project. And at the same time, while the vehicle's running training programs, the second component is linked to school development programs, where copies of the art collection are incorporated in the vehicle, and they are used for human rights training in schools, where young people are taught how to use creative skills or art, etc., as a means of overcoming your daily problems. And it's that mechanism has proved extremely successful, and 5,000 learners have gone through that training program with the vehicle in the last year. Our first major exhibition of Ifale to Repatriated Work took place in June last year. It was one of the premier cultural events for the World Cup. When we heard in 2005 that South Africa was awarded the World Cup, all the artwork that we repatriated since then to now, we jealously guarded for a major exhibition for 2010. And we opened that exhibition at Constitution Hill in June 2010. It was opened by the Australian Sports Minister while on her visit to South Africa. And has had a successful run with tourists from 24 countries having viewed it at Constitution Hill. There was a request to extend it. It was extended for a further 2 months there before it moved to Cape Town. It's currently in Durban, and just this is a catalogue of the exhibition that's currently running. And it now moves on its international schedule, where it will open in Australia in May of this year. Then it would move to the British Museum in September of 2011, before going on to New York and Santiago in Chile in 2012. And all of the exhibition has been linked to a number of engagements, public engagements, school programs, seminars, etc., because it's important for us that these are living exhibitions. So it generates a great deal of debate on the whole issue of human rights and so on. And so this is an extremely successful initiative, I think, on the part of IFALE in terms of our brief of education and outreach and sharing the collection with the people of South Africa. We continue to host academic conferences and seminars nationally on the whole issue of art and human rights, which is part of our brief on creating debate and engagement on this area. And we have implemented a publication program, which has resulted in many academic contributions. We've just completed a chapter for the South African Democracy and Education Trust, which was launched last year, on visual arts and protest. We've just completed a chapter for the International Journal of Anthropology. And 3 years ago, together in collaboration with the Department of Education, we launched a book for schools entitled Walk Tall Without Fear. In terms of repatriation, in the last 3 years, we've brought back into the country 415 pieces of artwork, art objects, and archival collections from 11 countries. And we've always been asked, is it a difficult task finding this material? Now, because this is material that's been taken out legally, if I could use the term legally, it hasn't been looted from our country, it hasn't been stolen from our country. As Carlo Jordan has said, it was an altruistic move on the part of these diplomats and visitors to buy this artwork. We were pleasantly surprised, because when we launched Ifaletu, I remember the media saying to me, "Do you know where you're going to find this artwork?" I said, "No." They said, "Do you know how much there is out there?" I said, "No." But over the last 3 years, as I've said, 415 pieces, and that is with donors approaching us with a view to giving back to South Africa. And of course, this is generously donated without any financial benefits. So we're not paying for this, any heritage material that we bring back into the country. And thus far, we haven't had to use the services of SARA or the Heritage Council to mediate in any instance, because it's always been a very collaborative effort. We're approached by donors, or we approach people who we think may have these collections. So it's been, in terms of engagement, it's been a pleasant one thus far. And I hope I could say the same in another 3 to 4 years' time. We continue to participate in the Grahamstown or the National Arts Festival. Young people who undergo our three-phase training programs during the course of their stint with Ifaletu, we usually choose those who produce the best products, take them to Grahamstown, where they participate in the craft market selling their products. And I'm very pleased to add that they usually return from Grahamstown having secured sales of a minimum of 5,000 rand during that stint. I mean, one of our young trainees, he came back having sold his products for up to 28,000 rand in that short stay in Grahamstown. So it's been, in other words, Ifaletu is doing something right here in terms of the type of products that young people are being taught to create. We have just began with the installation of art incubators in Soweto and Mamelodi. Now, this is linked closely to Ifaletu's entrepreneurial development program. Our training is broken up into three sessions. Phase one, which is the product development, where we teach people who have the skills. Many young people believe they are artists because they can draw. But they do not realize that in order to generate a business, you've got to create a market-ready product. Now, this I learned myself very harshly about 4 years ago when we began on the fashion initiative. I approached the Macy's stores in the UK very enthusiastically and said to them, "Would you buy products of this project which highlight the South African brand?" And they said to me, "No, we won't touch South African clothing because it's not market ready." And that's when I realized the importance of creating market ready cultural products. And that's why we included this in phase one of our development, when we train young people on visual arts, sculpture, fashion, craft, etc. The first phase is, how do you create market ready products? The second phase is, how do you now turn this into an entrepreneurial activity and make it a business? And once they've gone through that phase, it's a three-year program, we get on to the final phase, which is the incubators, which we set up in particular areas, allow them to practice their business skills in these incubators, where they run their businesses, they create their products, and engage with tourists. That's why we work closely with SA Tourism and International Marketing Council, because we're placing these incubators on what could be a tourist trail. So it would encourage tourists to pass through these areas and engage with these young people and buy their products. Now, we've just set up the incubator in Mamelodi. The Soweto one will be up in July, and two will be up in KwaZulu-Natal in September. And we expect with the funding, once we secure further funding, to set these up all over the country. And we're very proud of the fact that many of the products created are now selling at the duty-free stores at the airport. So when you pass through the airport and you see Paletto products, just remember it's ours. Now, when I talk about forthcoming events, we continue with our core programs of entrepreneurial development all over South Africa, our mobile training, our repatriation, etc. But I've highlighted in my document the international events for two reasons. Because it will help us bring in funding, core funding, and secondly, it would showcase the South African brand of culture abroad. And one of those here, in September, October of this year, we are holding an initiative in London, which is called London Celebrates South African Heritage, where we would be hosting a fundraising gala dinner event with Hugh Masekela, one of our board members who generously agreed to perform for us without any cost, for 250 invited guests. And we would have a charity auction as well at the same time, so that should help us raise funding. And at about the same time, we will open the Home and Away exhibition at the British Museum and hold a reception at the British Museum. So all of that, being Heritage Month in South Africa, is a good time to, I think, showcase the brand, South African cultural brand abroad. Then we have, in May 2011 of this year, a joint fundraiser with Mumbai Fashion Week, because in India, they are using social issues and or social problems and highlighting them through fashion, which is what Ifaletu is doing with its fashion range. And we're doing a joint effort, but it would also be a fundraiser for the foundation and its work in May. Then we open our international exhibition schedule in Australia in 2011. And in September, Heritage Month, 10 of our top trainees, Ifaletu trainees, will travel to London to talk about their work in South Africa and address CEOs from FTSE 100 companies in the UK about their work and how they've benefited from becoming involved in the heritage area of South Africa. We will be holding a joint craft effort with India in October 2012, where we will take South Africa's crafters who've been part of our program to join Indian crafters at a joint craft fair in India. And of course, we continue with the installation of further art incubators, which is the priority. So this, in essence, is the international program. And as I said, the intention here is to highlight to you how important the fundraising is to us. And that's why we focus internationally, because the domestic sector has become problematic in terms of raising funding. I've also highlighted in this document the development program, which has resulted in the entrepreneurial path we've taken. And it has been guided, all our work has also been guided by the 2007 Global Entrepreneurship Monitor, because this monitor has indicated that when it comes to entrepreneurial activity, South Africa is performing poorly in comparison to other countries, emerging economies. So while our government has remained committed to supporting small enterprises as one of the drivers of economic growth in the country and employment, understandably so, it is unable to successfully support all of these initiatives. That's why organizations, NGOs such as Ifaletu and others have a role to play in this, in filling this need to address this concern in the area of the creative industries, especially with regard to visual arts, sculpture, craft, fashion and design, and with particular reference to rural youth and women. And that is why we have embarked on the program of skills and enterprise development in partnership with, for example, the University of Pretoria School of Entrepreneurship. This has also been done in response to the requirements of transformation and economic growth needs. And also, if you contextualize Ifaletu's creative development program, you would see how important cultural and creative entrepreneurs are as economic drivers in the economy. And also, it does create global awareness for the strength of South Africa's cultural property and creates awareness of human rights abuses. The Department of Trade and Industry estimates that South Africa's creative sector alone contributes about 2 billion or 0.14% to South Africa's GDP annually. And in addition, the sector provides jobs and income for approximately 38,000 people through an estimated 7,000 small enterprises. So therefore, this can be a catalyst for rural economic development and for fostering expanded participation in the economy, especially by youth. For our work to succeed, Ifaletu needs to have the support of communities in which it works. And so we have to be assured of the necessary support in all the provinces. Thus far, you know, because of our track record of taking young people off the streets, of creating employment, generating an income for families, we have secured the support of communities, schools in the areas, and parents of participations, and other stakeholders such as principals and counselors. And this support is necessary. Without this, we would not enjoy the success that we have so far. And Ifaletu's work also impacts positively on targeted and non-targeted communities, who view the work of our organization as contributing to social and economic upliftment of the area. Hence our strategic intervention through training and use of local service providers whenever we're in an area ultimately contributes to the process of alleviating poverty in the rural areas. And it does help bring the rural communities into the first economy of South Africa. Now I would like to refer to the challenges. I mean, I could sit here a whole day and talk about the challenges, I'm sure. And of course, they're obvious. But in my document, I've alluded to three, and I'd like to add another two today in my presentation. Now, of course, the obvious ones are the lack of human capital and funding. But let's look at others, funding within the context of national priorities. Now, the reluctance on the part of major South African corporations to invest their resources in this area arises, from my experience, from how they perceive heritage and heritage institutions. The prevailing view is that heritage neither contributes to the building of a nation nor to the economic development of the country. Now, this is on the part of corporations. Now, perhaps this perception can be attributed to the haphazard way in which some organizations run the heritage business. But then again, this is no excuse for these corporate perceptions. Second challenge is the corporate education on the value of heritage. Those charged with social responsibility portfolios within these corporates are ignorant on the value of heritage in the nation-building agenda. Failure to invest in the mind and soul of a nation is a tragedy that will have dire consequences for the consolidation of our democracy. Now, Ifaletu has demonstrated that the repatriation of art and resulting enterprise development initiatives growing out of this major effort does find application in poverty alleviation, economic development, as well as in implementing the Millennium Goals. Third challenge, the failure to adopt international models as a learning curve for commercializing and branding of South African products, innovative marketing campaigns, and grant-making initiatives. This applies particularly to state agencies, because we feel that state agencies need to take a more aggressive interest in commercializing, assisting South African creative practitioners to commercialize their work. And this is rather slow. The next challenge is the absence of national policy on areas such as repatriation. Now this does, if I let to have been contributing input from its experience to these frameworks that are being developed, we are aware this is happening right now, but from the time Ifaletu was born in 2005 to now, we've had to operate on an ad hoc basis, which is not the wisest methods in which to carry out a project. And we have been compelled, as I say, to manage much of this work on an ad hoc basis because there hasn't been a national framework. But again, I emphasize we have tried to align the work to all national and international legislation that's in existence and continued to consult with the Ministry of Arts and Culture so that we did not operate in a vacuum. Finally, I would like to make a case by emphasizing the importance of teaching and nurturing creativity in South Africa. Given the growing focus in the school curriculum and tertiary institutions on science, math, and engineering, we are already discovering that without creativity, we will fail to really develop innovative solutions to South African problems. If we look at Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, both dropped out of college, but they were creative people who took technology to a whole new level. And that is why the nurturing of the sector in South Africa is critical for every ounce of our being in this country. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lamdani. Okay, thank you for the way you have unpacked this with passion. I want to believe that is taken care of in this particular day. Company will come to them. But then it's time for the members of the family to ask questions or to contribute in any way you like, but we need to interact with them. She spoke for 40 minutes. And as you were listening, I think you can check this member. I see three hands. Can I check again, please? Yeah, I see two hands. I start with Honorable No, it's not correct. I read wrong.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you also for this presentation. I think we've been given some information that I wasn't aware of everything that you are doing. I would like to ask, and I don't know whether I missed this, the works that you do that are repatriated, how do you deal with them? You said that you're not a repository. So what happens to these works of art or heritage objects? How are they looked after? Are they available, accessible to the public, etc.? And then secondly, if we look at your vision and your mission, one does see a bit of overlap also with what the Department of Arts and Culture is supposed to be doing. What is the nature of your collaboration and interaction with the department to make sure that you don't overlap?
Okay, thank you.
The problem is the lack of resources to
do the preservation work, and you're imposing collections then on these institutions. So we feel that we should find the funding to carry out the work, use it for outreach and education, which is what we continue to use it for, and the human rights program, national and international exhibitions. And once all of that is done, then find the appropriate home for it. And this must be in agreement with the donor or the donor's family and the Department of Arts and Culture. So does that answer that question? Yes, we are. Since this has been an initiative that began with the intervention of the National Department of Arts and Culture, there has been a continued collaboration with the department since the birth of the foundation. And new strategies, etc., are always implemented in consultation with the department. So we continue to work very closely with the Department of Arts and Culture. I did allude to the number of national and international programs, 26 national and international projects over the last 3 years. Of the 26, 17 have been national projects, and the others have been international. When I refer to international projects, I refer to collaborations, which result in us holding events abroad, as well as taking our trainees abroad and allowing collaborations to occur between our youth and youth in those countries, creating engagements, joint projects, and so on. Again, it's allowing our young people to benefit from our exposure abroad. The projects, IPALETU has been working thus far in KwaZulu-Natal, in the Northwest Province, Gauteng, Limpopo. We're now moving to Mpumalanga for the next phase. We have not worked since our development in the Cape, Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, Western Cape. We haven't gone that way because, strangely enough, whenever we bring in project funding, it's the funder who dictates which rural node the money should be used in. And so much of the money was allocated to these particular areas. And so we've had to focus on those areas. For example, the U.S. Embassy, when we set up incubators and training, they said we would like it devoted to the Mamelodi community. So we've had to focus on Mamelodi. AusAid says we look at black development work done in the Northwest Province. So we would have to focus on the Northwest Province. But we are hoping in 2012 onwards to start focusing on the Cape, Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, Western Cape. That's where we haven't been thus far. And no, we have not been successful in getting any provincial funding for projects, even though they are run in these provinces. And that has been much to our dismay. Yes, the issue of what happens to the trainees. Before we even embarked on training, we were still involved purely on repatriation work. We had a harsh reality check in terms of training in South Africa. Because what had happened is we had involved ourselves in the first MTN Durban Fashion Week and launched IPALETU's foray into fashion development and heritage and so on, and invited movers and shakers from South Africa to a cocktail event in Durban at the Fashion Week to show them how important heritage is in economic development. And we thought, well, why don't we get gifts for these special guests to the cocktail event, because many of them were also from abroad, cultural products that show them the strength of our cultural brand. And we found a group of women who used created jewelry dolls from paper mache, using paper mache work on plastic Coke and Fanta bottles. They would go to the dumps, collect these bottles, and they were taught to do the most amazing paper mache work on it and wire work. And this created a market-ready jewelry doll. We were fascinated. Then, of course, one of our stakeholders from the UK had gone back with his gift
And he contacted us a month later and said, you know what, I may have a market for you at Harrods, because it's a project, we're marketing just a project, for these jewelry dolls. So I went back to the lady who ran training. This wasn't a Nepalese training, but I went back to her in Gauteng and I said, I'd like to get in touch with this woman because we now have a market for their products. And she says, no, I'm sorry, I don't know where they are. I just did the training and they've gone off to all their different areas. I don't know what happened to them. That was a learning curve for us because we realized training is a saturated market. You need to hold their hands after training. And that's when Ifaletu began, implemented the three-phase training where you do product development, then you do teaching them to turn it into a business, and then we set the incubator. We set the incubators up because they remain with us for a period of time. Once they're running successful businesses, then we leave them because they sit in those incubators for a year to 2 years, depending on our funding, producing their products. And we mentoring them through the University of School, Pretoria School of Entrepreneurship. They provide the mentorship over that time to ensure they're doing it right. We give them the seed funding to carry out their work. And they begin implementing their business practice. And also, you know, through our work abroad, we create these markets, like with the SA Tourism in London. We're creating an opportunity in Heritage Month to allow crafters to produce all their works now and to be able to sell it in London. So, and also we create markets through tourism initiatives with them, bring the tourists there. So you see, we are holding their hands up for the training. We try. And so otherwise, you can't train them in NISA. And that's what's creating greater unemployment here. You know, you're sitting with a whole lot of trained people who don't know what to do after that. And dropouts. Ifaletu is very firm in its training program, because our emphasis to young people is, now, how do we find these young people from the rural areas? You may want to know, how do we find these trainees? We don't advertise. Assuming we decide that we are aware, for example, in Limpopo, there's a skill there in bead working, bead making, that goes back many generations. We know that skill exists. And we know that we can get project funding to get young people involved in making beaded products. Because in Elim, in Limpopo, there's a, you know, this whole tradition of bead work, bead making goes back many years, many generations actually. So we engage with counselors in the area, with principals, with community leaders, and say, assist us in choosing the candidates you think should be part of this program. And once these candidates are chosen, that's why the community consultation is very important, otherwise the project wouldn't work. The fact that these are people identified by community means these young people have to deliver to the community. There's no dropping out. And they sign a contract with us. Any disciplinary error, any failure to attend a particular training session, they're out, because we emphasize to them that they are so privileged to be a part of this training program. Because of all the money being invested and the skills they're going to get, the exposure they're going to get. And so we haven't suffered greatly in that respect. Even in terms of the mobile facility training women in Singa and in Tanzini and so on in KwaZulu-Natal, the women have been really very persistent in ensuring they're there for all the sessions and participated all the time. It's been negligible, the dropout rate. Not something that's really bothered us, because these young people are serious about making something of their lives. And, you know, what was, you know, when we took a group to Grahamstown once from Mabopane in the Northwest, and whenever they come back, we have a briefing session. Tell us, how did your parents react? What did you learn? What's the good learning experience, etc. And last year, I had a very poignant feedback from these young people where they said to me that when we arrived back at the bus station, our parents were waiting for us, which has never happened before. Previously, parents had their own issues. They had no time to bother about going to see their children arrive at the bus station. But they were beginning to see their children in a new light, beginning to treat them with respect and see them as an important contributor to the household. So again, you know, for changing the dynamics, it's changing the dynamics of the relationship between parents and children. I had one parent come to me and tell me, why are you wasting my child's time? How is this going to put food on the table? And I said, well, give us an opportunity. And yes, a year later, I mean, she's a constant visitor to Ifaletu. And I mean, she is just over the moon about how her child's life has turned around. So it's these kinds of initiatives, I think, that do make a difference to young people in this country. So that's why, you know, a dropout rate has not been a major problem for us. It's been negligible. Yeah, I think I've covered the question.
Yeah, I also think she responded, but I see the Honorable Chief Mabunda has something to ask. And I said deliberately, Chief Mam, so that you understand that we have all the relevant people that deal with people on the ground, in particular community. Over to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman,
I think whether I would call it a concern or whatever, but if I didn't miss the interpretation, the intention of
She, in her deliberations, she made mention of something like Ifaletu is operating without the national legislative. Whether this is a ball that is coming back to our court or something that needs to be looked by the Department of Arts and Culture. But however, I just want us to look into that, maybe to get more information related to that aspect. If it is the way I did it here incorrectly, maybe. The second thing, I heard the CEO talking about, you know, making reference to, whether I'll pronounce it correctly, talking about this Grahamstown or whether, what is that, Grahamstown?
Yeah.
Grahamstown, is it a marketing institution area or is the exhibition area where all these things is happening? So I just want more clarity on that also. Maybe the last thing, of course, it's lack of understanding and not acquainted ourselves with this, the terminologies that we have used in your institution. When you talk about, you know, this fossil casting project, you know what you are talking about, and really, because I'm just seeing it for the hearing for the first time, I might not be acquainted with that. Just for clarity also, it's not just a question to ask. Just some things.
Let's take it like one thing at a time. We can go for another set of questions. You have noted, I guess you have noted what the chief wanted to learn from you. I've seen a honorable. Is it quite right? No. The hand at the. Oh. Was it you? Because I thought I saw your hand. Was it? Never.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Honorable, this time I said it correctly.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to know, just getting back to the department, in terms of the size of the funding you do get from the Department of Arts and Culture, because you only alluded to the first seeding amount that you got. If I led sustainable with the funding model that you have at the moment, we all know that funding is a major problem, and the kind of the type of work that you're doing, do you think that the model you have in terms of being an NGO as opposed to being a declared institution, which would be better for you? And then also just in terms of the projects that you do, I think what you are doing, in fact, and here perhaps the representative from the department can also assist, sounds very much like investing in culture. which is a major program within the department, and to what extent are you involved in that whole process?
And the only one in Parliament. Thank you, sir. Thanks, CEO, for the quite a very good presentation. Very clear and straightforward. Now we know who you are. Just for two things that I would need some clarity on. Number one, is it Dr. Johnson or DI? And then you also have with your list of financial groupings, yeah, that are actually really behind your activities in terms of funding. Is it ADSA, not APSA? Is it APSA? Okay. No, that's fine. now, the next question that I would like to actually really impose to you is, what role do you still have for T.I. Johnson and Bruce, and as well as Australian Commission, who were part of the initiators previously? Do you still have or maintaining, you know, the relationship with them, and what is the relationship? I'm also interested, I understand that you are actually getting some monies here and there, particularly with, you know, from the Department of Arts and Culture and others. Would you indicate your status, the state of the finance in terms of auditing statement? How far have you been audited, and where are you in that regard? I'm also interested in knowing what is the size of your personnel. And on your board of, the board of trustees, board members, okay, you have all those, you know, South African heavyweights, you said. I don't see, good as it is, but I don't see any participation of a civil society, you know, member here. And you might have, but all of these are seen as heavyweights, and I don't think you would be calling them heavyweight. But also in particular, the participation of the ambassador, Princeton, layman. Why this ambassador? Is this an ambassador for the country, or ambassador is a name? If it's not too much, can I continue, sir?
Yeah, I'm listening. Okay, I will have spoken.
Okay. On your challenges, I've picked up three, if I'm correct. You know, I'm not going to mention them. The three that is featuring here. And they are quite very, very clear. I just want to find out about these challenges. What are the options to have these, you know, right and be corrected? And I'm not going to mention them, as you see.
Yeah, let us allow them to respond to this.
And I caution those who ask the questions to listen carefully so that if you are answered, you will indicate. If you are not answered, so you will indicate. Otherwise, over to you.
The question on the legislative framework, I raised it as a cautionary flag, just so that you do know that we are operating in this kind of manner. Where, I mean, there is no framework. At the moment, it's being developed, and we are providing input, given our experience in repatriation, specifically to repatriation. And but from 2005 to now, we've been operating without any legislative guidance, although we have used other legislations, such as SARA's legislations and international legislations, as a guide to ensure that we were carrying out our work in the appropriate fashion. So I just raised this so that you are aware of the fact that IFALETU has been in operation for 5 years, repatriating South African heritage material, but there has not been a legislative framework for this. The National Arts Festival was originally known as the Grahamstown Arts Festival. It's a festival that's held once a year in Grahamstown, devoted purely to celebrating South African art, craft, performing arts, and so on. So it's the place all creative practitioners want to be. And to be able to get there and demonstrate your work, showcase your skills, is considered quite a privilege for people in the creative sector. That's why our young people, the first step, once they successfully complete training with us, and we choose the best to go to Grahamstown, I mean, they're over the moon to be able to be given that opportunity to go to Grahamstown, either exhibit their works or to trade. And that's why I referred to National Arts Festival. It was originally known as Grahamstown Arts Festival. Fossil casting. As I indicated, these fossils are, for example, the latest discovery was the skeleton of the young boy in the cradle of humankind. And now the whole world wants to study that find. And they need a replica of that skeleton to be able to study it, because obviously the original is gone into the vault in South Africa. And so you need to create replicas of that. And that's what our young people have been taught to do, how to build those fossils, whether it's a skeleton or the head or the arm or whatever of a skeleton that's been discovered. And it's an income-generating project because, as I said, there's no steel in that area, and fossils are our heritage, and you need to develop replicas of these. And that's why we became involved in it. In fact, it took me ages to learn what fossil casting was, you know, myself. another thing is, what's interesting is we've had to get people from Origin Center at Fitz University, which is responsible for discovering all these fossils, to come and speak to the communities in Mamelodi about allowing their children to get involved in something like this because it's considered disturbing the dead. So, you know, there was that whole cultural discussion around this before we could get the approval of the community, the councillors, etc., to get young people involved in this project. The funding model. IFALETU is not sustainable beyond 2 years more. That is the reality, you know. It's and that's why we are always pushing the frontiers internationally, because funding has dried up in this country. And as I said, project funding is easy because it's linked to economic development and poverty alleviation. But core funding to run the foundation is impossible. And fortunately, we were in a grind about 3 years ago And we had to approach the minister and say we needed core funding, otherwise Ifaletu was going to shut down. And fortunately, the Department of Arts and Culture came up with $1.5 million per year over 3 years, which ends this year. Am I right, Evan? Yeah. Next financial year of $1.5 million to assist us in terms of our operational mandate. So, yes, the funding model does not allow sustainability beyond 2014. We have not collaborated with the department, in all honesty, with the Department of Arts and Culture in the investing in culture process. Not because we didn't want to, but I think we've just all been too busy. And we've never got around to engaging with the department on this, but you know, we did have discussions that we need to do this and revisit this now. It's Di Johnston, D-I, not doctor, yeah. It's correct. Yeah, her name is Di. And yes, my apologies, it was a typographical error. It should be EBSA Foundation, A-B-S-A. Yes, we do have a role for the Australians. As I said, this was an Australian initiative. And we continue to involve them. That's why the first major exhibition we're holding outside of South Africa is in Australia in May. It's taking that collection back to where it came from. And they continue to open doors for us because these diplomats, they posted here in the 60s and 70s, they have a good relationship with diplomats from all countries that were operational in South Africa in that time. And that is why they continue to work as ambassadors for the Ifaletu Foundation internationally in terms of putting us in touch with other diplomats in different parts of the world who may have art collections. And we continue, the legacy component is very important for our work. People who donate or who've been involved in our project, we do recognize them through different strategies that we have, such as on the website, as well as plaques that we present to them, or they are invited to our international events. And they work, we continue to recognize them, because without that Australian initiative at that time, there may not have been an Ifaletu today. They may not have been aware of all of this collection out there that could have come back into the country. Staff members of Ifaletu, we have four core staff members, and yet we've done all of this. So there's no excuse for a bloated staff component. I always say that. If we could do it with four staff members, all of them, and run our work nationally and internationally, we're fine. We don't need any more. We're just fine. And civil society members. Yes, we did try to approach civil society members, but because we do not pay members to serve on our boards, it's been an extremely difficult exercise because members of the civil society are unkeen to give their time without payment for services. And as an NGO, we do not pay people to serve on the board. So we've had to bring in these so-called heavyweights who see it as their social responsibility to give back to you and the country and without asking for money. But we continue searching for people to represent civil society on our board. And why Princeton Lyman? Princeton Lyman was originally the American ambassador to South Africa in 1990. And he was part of the negotiations, CODESA negotiations, but from the U.S. side. And that's why we thought he's an appropriate person to bring on board when we were looking at somebody from the U.S. who was willing to assist us. Again, it's about who is willing to put something back into South Africa after they've left the country. And these are people who are willing to do that. Because once people leave the country, they pretty much don't care. And Princeton Lyman continues to be involved. In fact, today I think he serves on the Council on African Affairs in the U.S. So that's why he continues to be involved. What are the options to correct the challenges? How do we change them? We need to change the mindset of corporate South Africa. Because my first two challenges, which I've noted here, refer to the failure of corporate South Africa to recognize how important heritage is towards building a nation, not just socially, but economically as well. And I don't have the answer to that. And as I said, once we change the, firstly, it's virtually impossible to go to corporate South Africa and talk about arts and culture. They run a mile. It's considered low on the list, not low, it's not even on the list of budgetary priorities. And hence, you know, we've had these challenges, as my colleague from arts and culture would tell you. It's very difficult to get there, so I really don't have the answer to that. The third challenge of adopting international models, the reason I raise this is Tata has been a funder, not a funder, they provided the vehicle for the mobile training, they continue to be involved, although they provided the vehicle, they continue to be involved. And this is Tata Africa. In fact, when we launched the truck last year, Tata brought all its representatives from the African countries to the launch. And they brought their international chairman from India for the launch. Because it tells us how important they see cultural heritage in terms of economic development. And what we found interesting is this whole issue of mobile training. They felt it's a model they could implement in India. And that's why they remain interested in our work, and they seem keen to want us to go to India and talk about how this model is working here. But what they said to me was interesting. They said, the challenge you have is commercializing South African art and craft, which India has been so successful in doing. And it's true, because even if you look at Native American art and craft in the U.S., you look at the Aboriginal art and craft, they haven't been successful in commercializing it, but India has been. And also, these are created in the villages, and they're all market-ready products. And they insisted I go on a visit to India and look at how it's been done and why. And I did 2 weeks ago, and I was just blown away by the range of products and market-ready products. I mean, I attended a craft fair in Bangalore where they brought together crafters from the most rural villages of India. And I tried to communicate with them and understand how they were able to do this. And what I found is that the state intervention is so important. For example, the Ministry of Arts and Culture in India has craft councils set up in every state. And these craft councils take a direct interest in craft production in the villages. And there is a database set up, which is a direct link for export. If somebody is looking for beaded dolls, if you approach India and say, I want to buy beaded dolls, they would pull up that database and say, you have to buy from Miss So. She's creating it in the village of Andhra Pradesh somewhere. And she produces the best dolls. You've got to buy it from her. So again, it's this direct link with export markets. And also the fact that these councils are monitoring the work all the time, and they are providing the money for supplies, ensures that it's continuous and it's creating market-ready products. I mean, these products were really 100% market-ready. So that's why I say we need this kind of intervention by the Ministry of Arts and Culture to create these, not just provincial ministry centers of arts and culture, but councils such as this, which focus purely on these areas. And that's why I referred to that. And the last challenge I looked at was the importance of teaching and nurturing creativity. Again, this goes back to our national ministries of trade and industry, arts and culture, education, and so on. And that's where it needs to begin. so that we don't lose the creative spirit in this country.
No, thank you very much. But there are things that I thought from the chair, while I was listening, we need to put across to you. My colleague spoke of the job creation in South Africa. It's a huge thing. Very huge. I don't think anyone in any company or driving any company can miss that objective. It's such that when Parliament says we are going to hire so many people, there's no mistake about it. But it's not like the 400 people seated in Parliament that's going to do that. It's about the companies. That's why the companies are funded. And to hear, to hear a company talking of we are four and we are fine. Is that what you said? Four, we are fine, don't want anyone. We need to move as a country. There is no way you are four and you are fine in this country. When we talk of culture of this country, you are not fine. You need to grow, and not only where you are in that particular office or wherever you are, but in all the provinces. So that when we come with our steps the next time, we have a very handsome number. I think I need to put that across. Because there are a lot of people in South Africa that are doing things with their hands. Nobody is counting on them. Nobody counts them, because it's like, you know, they don't even know that what they are doing. They are employed, actually they are self-employed. So the steps that we give the country is not necessarily correct. We need to get that. Anyone who is doing this work or whatever must be counted, because those people are employed. They are employed, they are getting an income, people are buying from them, but they need to be organized. And we rely on IFALE to do that. I think that's what I thought we should put that across. And the department also, you need to engage the department, not wait for them to engage you. Because that's why the department will sit down and plan, but in all fairness, they need to be engaged for you to move. Because if Parliament funds the department and you don't engage them, you may not get your share. So you need to engage them, and they need to be able to use you correctly. I mean we need that. I think we have listened to them, colleagues, and we know what they stand for, and I want to believe that we can rely on them to go and improve for sure. We wouldn't like you to come back next year and tell us that you are full.
Quickly, I think also we have two lots of entities to consider, but I think maybe also, I say always seeing is believing. So if we can visit the projects, I think they will also tell us, what you actually explained to us today. What the postal was, you also was asking all the members. I think that's my member for today.
You are going to break up my, but just to add to this so that I don't forget.
Okay.
Can you bear with me? You see, if you see, you want to know what's happening in the classroom, and you are maybe a second manager or a principal, you don't tell the teacher that I'm coming to your class now. Because if you tell them, the class will be not perfect for that particular day. You visit, you know, such that yes, visiting we will for sure, and we'll just inform you so that we find you there. Mm-hmm. Not that get ready for us. You must, every day, people must be able to visit you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there was a hand. We get that?
Last hand, if I may. Let's check if there is another person who wants, the chief has something and the chief cannot be denied. So the group of you will ask your question, and I think we'll be moving forward to the meeting.
Thank you, sir. Just to correct one thing, I'm not the last one, I'm the first one because I'm in the pitch. First chair, yeah. Okay, thank you. All right. Thanks for the response. That was quite a lot of questions, and you actually managed, especially mine. There's only one question that I want to maybe follow up on, too. In fact, as an appeal, not necessarily a follow up. That I'm not very much satisfied, you know, with the reasons why the civil society could not be participating on the board, decision making. This country, you know what's happening. And I think you actually have spoken from your heart, which is okay. But mine is to actually appeal to the department, you know, to consider really, you know, how could it make it happen when assisting anyhow, you know, with some little bit of finance they have, you know, to include the participation of the civil society. I think that is major, that is important. I'm just leaving it there. Thank you.
Thanks. My colleague has stolen my thinking. I was just likely to make that little follow-up. But however, through you, Chairperson, maybe because the Department of Arts and Culture is here with us, and they are also co-founders to the institution. Maybe if I'm not jumping before the gun, they can share with us some other related matters with the institution and to us also. Thank you. My colleague has covered.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's very relevant. Can we hear from the Department of Arts?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, just to add to two or three of the issues and the questions, the responses that were provided by Dr. Ramdani. The first one is the question of the legislative framework. I think it's correct to say that the legislative framework does not exist. There are bits and pieces of provisions in different legislation that govern the whole question of repatriation of cultural objects. For example, in the National Heritage Resources Act, the responsibility is given to the South African Heritage Resources Agency. In the National Heritage Council Act, that responsibility is also given to the National Heritage Council to do repatriation. And of course, then there are international instruments such as the illicit trafficking convention, the UNIDROIT convention that was mentioned by Dr. Ramdani. But it's very fragmented. It doesn't really help someone who works in that area to guide the work in a coordinated way. And of course, there are processes underway to correct that. There's the Cultural Laws Third Amendment Bill that is on its way, to which institutions have made input to try and streamline the responsibility for repatriation. That's the one. The other one that's quite interesting that was mentioned by the Honourable Member Lotter is the question of the Board of IFALETU perhaps looking at the question of the current funding model in the light of sustainability, and Dr. Ramdani did mention that the organisation in terms of its lifespan is looking at only two more years of survival, and the possibility of looking at being declared as a cultural institution. But of course, it would be the decision of the board after considering a due diligence study and a consideration of other models. Although in the department, honourable members will remember from the last presentation where the DG and the Deputy Director General of Culture raised the question of the proliferation of declared cultural institutions and the burden that places on the department in terms of its allocation. Those are issues that will have to be considered also on the part of the department in terms of looking at the model of a declared cultural institution. I think From my side, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I think those are the two additions that I wanted to make, other than just indicating that the areas where Honorable Members mentioned that we should work with IFALETU much closer with regard to civil society participation, we'll attend to that. And also within other programs within the Department of Arts and Culture, investing in culture, I think there are clear synergies there that we need to exploit. And going forward, we will do that and certainly reporting that on that in the future.
Yeah. Allow me on that note to say I think we are well informed as a committee. And that I was also concerned about the legislative framework, but it's like a process that we say that the next time we meet, or we will get information that now we have the legislature, because definitely it's very important to be guided by the legislature in whatever we do. So allow me to thank you for this report, the report that were well tabulated. And we want to believe that these are not just reports seen as it's like work as usual. It's about creating jobs. It's very important that wherever you find yourself in South Africa, given a responsibility, you need to make one difference, you know, just one difference wherever you are. So let's make this grow so that we have people who are working from the things that they do. Because everybody can do something, they just need to be organized so that from what they do, from a hobby, just a hobby, you end up aiming from that one. Yes, we have a very rich culture, and it's good that we are interacting with a lot of countries even internationally, and we please that this continues. And from this side, I want to believe that we can do. Are you covered, members? Thank you very much, yeah. So I will declare this. Thank you. I actually will attend. Thank you.